Hello, and this is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us for this week's program. With us in studio is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. And if you've got a question for Mayor Dennis in our next half hour, we'd love to have it by telephone at 496-1999. You can also email it to ask@WBAA.org. You can tweet your questions as well to @WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to start with a conversation I actually had with somebody else this week that you came up in.
Oh, really?
I know that's probably always something that you don't want to hear, but this is totally innocuous, I promise you. I was speaking with Wally Tyner, an ag economist here at Purdue, about the story that I'm working on about CityBus installing these new compressed natural gas filling stations. And one of the things about doing that, of course, is that it's an economic choice on CityBus's part.
Sure.
And he says, you know, gas prices are going down, and so people are looking at this compressed natural gas and going, oh, gosh, was that the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
And he says it can become the right thing to do unequivocally if, for instance, cities like Lafayette and West Lafayette move some of their rolling stock, some of their garbage trucks and some of their other fleet to also run on compressed natural gas so that you can have as many people using that filling station as possible. And I wanted to ask you whether that's something that's being considered in West Lafayette.
Absolutely. Marty Sennett, who does a great job of running the bus company down there, he got some federal assistance to establish those natural gas stations. And part of that assistance required local government participating at a greater role than just financially. And so we have modified some of our trash trucks to operate on natural gas. And our hope is to expand that to our entire fleet someday. The unfortunate reality of it is that, you know, the modification process is relatively pricey, as is the purchase price of a brand new one. But we believe because of how tweaky the prices in gasoline are, I mean, you never know from one month to the next what's going to happen with those prices. We feel that there is a little bit more stability in the natural gas market. And we have aggressively pursued that option. But again, we have to do it in a way that's not cost prohibitive for us.
So when you say it's pricey, it costs something like $450,000 to buy a new CNG bus for CityBus. What does it cost you to retrofit a garbage truck?
Well, the retrofit process is around $20,000, but the actual purchase of a new product would be in several hundred thousand. And what we enjoy about it is we enjoy the fact that it's efficient, we enjoy the fact that it's clean, and we enjoy the fact that it's not completely dependent upon petroleum products as we know them. The downside would be obviously the location where the fueling station is, and we'd eventually obviously like to put one in West Lafayette as well. But one of our bigger concerns is how it operates in cold weather, the warm-up time, and then with the garbage trucks, there's a lot more going on those vehicles than just the motor running and moving forward or in reverse. There's a lot of other equipment that's operated off the engine and whatnot. So we've committed to doing, I think we're going to do two, and we'll see how that works.
So you're viewing this as a pilot project of sorts?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. But we're enthusiastic about it because, again, you know, with the vehicles that we have down there, whether it be trash trucks, whether it be pickup trucks, or even down the road, whether they be fire trucks. And I know historically there's been police cars that have operated off compressed gas as well. We'll just see how the market goes, and we'll see what availability and the cost of those products are for the city.
I wanted to get to a tweeted question we had actually from City Councilman Nick DeBoer. He wants to know about some of the retail developments that are going on, specifically Grant Street Station near the south part of the Purdue campus. He says, you know, it's the start of a longer trend toward having more retail businesses on the south part of campus. Is there a concerted movement to do that?
Well, there is. I think a lot of retailers are realizing that there is a market out there that's not yet been tapped into. When you look at the density of the population on the south end of town, when you look at the fact that it's predominantly students, and it's predominantly students that walk or ride a bicycle to class, to have some retail down there would be fantastic for those that are gutsy enough to invest. The big challenge that we have as a city is incentivizing those retailers to come. You know, the presumption is that people look at a demographic overlay of the city of West Lafayette, and they say we have all these students who have, you know, all these wallets that are just so willing to buy things. But it doesn't read that way, unfortunately. Oftentimes when people look at the city of West Lafayette, the demographic is predicated upon our permanent population and the average income of that population. And obviously that's a false negative or a false positive, which either way you want to look at it.
No, it happens with college communities everywhere.
Everywhere. Every one of us have that challenge to overcome. So what it requires is an interested vendor, some connectivity with the city, and then some promises of having the walk-in traffic that they would be more than happy to have. And with what we've been doing as a local government, we've been trying to incentivize that through conversations with vendors that are obviously either from other college communities or that have had success in other college communities, and make them aware of the fact that they've got a pretty solid market here. Folks, it would be very, very inviting to have that kind of product.
So you're trying to target people who have already been in a Bloomington or a Muncie mm-hmm. or something like that, people who you would not necessarily have to make the argument to those companies that, A, this is a 9-month-a-year thing versus mm-hmm. a 12-month-a-year thing, people who would understand, for instance, well, what do I do during the summer?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the issues that people often bring to us. We've had conversations with the folks that run Trader Joe's, kind of an ongoing joke between us and the newspaper. And Trader Joe's is interested for 9 months of the year. And then there's that gap where they believe that they're going to have, you know, this turns into a desert. And it's just not true. You know, a lot of our students are here year-round. And with Purdue considering going to a year-round academic calendar, that just more than validates that argument. And, you know, when people look and focus on our student market, they can't ignore our permanent resident market. You know, we've got about 40,000 folks who live here year-round. And the average income of those folks is significantly higher than what our demographic shows. So those products would be attractive to those folks, and it also would be something that could actually generate revenue for our retailers. You know, we have, in addition to Trader Joe's, we've been very interested in trying to recruit an Apple store because we realized there would be a very significant market for an Apple store here as well. But again, you're dealing with almost every community in the country that would like to see that happen.
You mentioned the idea of going to a year-round calendar, changing what your business climate would look like. I've spoken with faculty members about this, and there's almost universal dislike for mm-hmm. the idea of mm-hmm. going to a year-round calendar, as you might imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you could have 3 months off and work 9 months a year, why wouldn't you in some respects? Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is if that does happen, that is potentially a boon to your business climate, because now you're not just, I would think, aiming at only the people who have had success in other college communities. Instead, it would seem like you could aim at a broader market because now you're talking about a 12-month-a-year community mm-hmm. just like any other community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when you talk about college students and you talk about a university like Purdue that has such a worldwide prestigious reputation, the understanding is that you will have students that will be in a position to make some of those purchases. You're going to have students that, you know, if they're coming from anywhere in the world, that they're going to be in a position to actually take advantage of retail opportunities. You know, I know when I was in college, I worked all 4 years during my undergrad work, and I was the typical classic impoverished college student. And those times have changed. You know, my parents, you know, they basically said, if you want to go to school, get a job and enjoy your time. But things have changed a little bit. You know, that there's an understanding that success is definitely predicated on a good, solid education. And I think parents start saving for their child's education early on in their marriage. So it's a different world. And I see that, you know, with the students that come here, they come here with a little more financial support than what might have been happening 30 or 40 years ago.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love you to give us a call and ask your question of the mayor live on the show today. 496-1999 is the telephone number. You can also tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter or email us at ask@WBAA.org. We actually have an emailed question in from Beverly from West Lafayette. She wants to know what policies are in place for West Lafayette landlords who don't keep up their rentals to be safe for their tenants.
Well, we have a routine inspection program that's operated through our Department of Development, and we are empowered to basically remove their privilege to lease that property if they don't comply. You know, we have started many a program throughout the city. Not most recently is our smoke detector inspection program, where our firefighters are going from door to door, making sure that the apartments have smoke detectors, and if they do have them, that they're properly operable. If they need batteries and things like that. But as a general rule, you know, most parents, when they come to our community, want to make sure that their children are going to be staying in either a residence, whether it be a dorm or a private residence, somebody's house, and it's going to be safe. And we have over 9,000 rental properties within the city of West Lafayette when you include our apartment complexes. And we have a team of folks in our development department that tries to get in there at least one group at least every few years to make sure that those things are kept up to a high standard. But in addition to that, we also have a process of complaint. If they see something that's out of line or something that needs to be fixed, they can call our Department of Development and we'll go out there and do an immediate inspection and try to make sure whatever that situation is that needs to be remedied is.
We have another listener question. Richard from Lafayette wants to know if there is a legal reason there's not a large music store in the area, since there are so many students around. He says, is it a zoning issue?
Music store as in instruments or albums and CDs?
I'm not entirely sure. It just says music store. I'm assuming we mean albums and things like that.
So. Well, there actually is one on the levee. It used to be called J&L Records. I'm not sure what it's called now, but they have probably one of the most extensive album collections of anything I've ever seen. They also have CDs and in some cases instruments. So we have them there. So you just got to look and find it. It's actually at the end, right near Tapawinka Park.
If you have a question for West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis, email it to ask@WBAA.org or tweet it to @WBAA News on Twitter. Also give us a call. 496-1999 is our telephone number. NDOT officials yesterday gave a presentation to the state budget agency where they said it could cost something like $4 billion extra dollars over the next 20 years on top of what the state already plans to spend to keep road and bridge infrastructure from falling into serious disrepair. Mm-hmm. This, of course, comes at the same time that NDOT is asking cities to take back control of roads. And what they really mean by take back control is, hey, you pay for it instead of us what it needs fixing. How worrisome is this overall financial climate in terms of making sure that roads and bridges, of course, which we have quite a number of here, are kept up?
Well, you know, to NDOT's credit, the relinquishment program has been going on for several years now. And in the city of West Lafayette, we've been in negotiation with NDOT about taking over the state roads that run through West Side, most specifically 52. The bargaining from both sides is fairly intense. And from our perspective, you know, we'd be more than happy to take over 52 from basically 231 to the Wabash if it's in a condition that's not going to immediately cost us money. You know, local government is no different than state government. State government's no different than federal government. Everybody needs more money, and your responsibilities and financial obligations are growing almost every day.
I don't mean to jump in on you, but it sounds like what you're saying is this relinquishment program might go better if, for instance, 52 in Lafayette and West Lafayette, State Road 28 in Frankfort, if they were all fixed so they were all nice and new, then the cities would be much more amenable to taking those roads back over. As long as they knew that somewhere down the line, and I stress down the line, that's when the fixing would need to happen.
That's real close, Dan. You know, it would be unreasonable for us to expect the road to be perfect. But if we were in a position where we were forced to take over a road that was in dire need of repair, because 52 is pretty rough. I mean, there's some work that needs to be done on it, and NDOT has agreed to do that work. That's the good news. The bad news of that is they're going to do it their way. And, you know, a city engineer is going to have a different perspective on a local road as opposed to a state engineer looking at one of many thousands of miles of roads. So we're in the process of watching the work being done on 52 in the hopes that we can have some sort of subjective input on how that's going to be completed. Once that is done, then we will have that negotiation about the relinquishment. Now, again, the road itself isn't all that's included. You know, when you have a new few miles of road, it's going to require equipment. You know, some cities and towns are not equipped to plow big roads. They just don't have the necessary technology to do so. The city of West Lafayette, we have some plows that were given to us when we took over 231, but we'd like to add to that collection. You know, the plows that run down our local streets are not the same as the plows that run on our interstates. They're completely different. So we'd like to have some equipment. And we also want to make sure that the roads that are done to our standards, because, you know, every city has its own local standards that are basically a requirement for their roads based upon what their citizens want. And West Lafayette's no different. So we're in a fortunate situation. We have a very positive relationship with NDOT. The folks that are doing the work are doing it based upon our recommendation. The only thing that I don't like about 52 is I've asked them repeatedly to get rid of those hideous Jersey Turnpike concrete barriers that separate the two roads. And they told me that they would, but then they responded secondarily that they're going to put something else there. And so I asked them and said, you're basically going to replace ugly with unattractive. And they said yes. So in some cases, we have a lot of subjective input. In other cases, we sort of get what we're given.
So we mentioned this $4 billion calculation over the next 20 years. And again, that's on top of what the state was already going to spend on roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. The legislature is about to start next month, a new budget writing session for a couple of years. The state, of course, has approximately a $2 billion surplus right now. You can never tell what's going to happen with those surpluses going forward, whether they're going to stay or not. What kind of hope would you have that the state legislature would find some way to allocate more money to this? Because it's on the order of $200 million extra dollars per year, so a tenth of what the state currently has in reserve or thereabouts. Is it likely that the state legislature would pony up that cash, or do you think it's more likely that they're going to find ways to say we need more relinquishment to happen so that local governments can pay for this?
Well, the state, through NDOT, is committed on a lot of road projects. They got a lot of things going on. So the revenue, you know, the story that I'm always told, the revenue is very busy working for the state as it stands. The additional cost is going to be a mathematical curiosity. I don't know how they're going to generate the revenue to be able to do that. You know, the one thing about roads and streets is there's a predictable lifespan with that. And if we're talking about 20 years, it's obviously not going to all happen at once. And that negotiation process with states, or excuse me, with cities and counties, has been ongoing for quite some time.
I guess we should also say, nor can you fix them all at once because you'll snarl traffic everywhere.
Well, some people actually believe that that's in our hearts, that what we try to do anytime we touch a road or a street. But the fact of the matter is that negotiation process is currently ongoing. I don't know how the legislature is going to respond to that. You know, I don't know. You know, I know that there is no interest in increasing any kind of fee or tax to try and support that. And I know that the presumption is that a non-major arterial state road that runs through a community probably could be absorbed by the community if it's in the proper shape to be so. So that could possibly be a way to write off some of that expense. But I think the fact of the matter is it's going to be done on a year-by-year, case-by-case basis. You know, it's not uncommon in some other states. You know, a friend of mine and I take our motorcycles down to the South all the time for a bike trip, and we see some of the conditions of the roads in the South. And some of the roads are so bad that what they do is they just close them and create detours. Now, I would hope that that wouldn't happen here in the state of Indiana. My presumption is that will not. You know, we've got some pretty responsible legislators that wouldn't allow that to happen. But that's worst case scenario. Best case scenario would be that there would be cooperative agreements with local communities, both counties and cities, and we'd be in a position to be able to work that out without putting any additional burden on our taxpayers.
We have a couple of listener questions that relate tangentially to roads. John wants to know if more state indicator signs can be put up showing how fast a driver is going to try to help people slow down a little bit.
They have one. It's right there in the middle of your steering wheel. It's called a speedometer. The fact of the matter is that oftentimes those signs have both a positive and a negative. It gives some and it takes some. There are some people, some theorists, that believe that those signs are distracting and that they cause people to take the attention that's needed to drive a vehicle at a high speed, and that's between 50 and 70 on one of our roads, and it could potentially cause accidents. The other thing is that the strongest inhibitor of speed is a police officer. And so probably the best way to reduce speed is to have more direct patrol on our major thoroughfares. I know in some states what they've done oftentimes is had police cars parked on the sides of the road or parked in the medians. And there might not be anybody actually in the car.
But it's a visual deterrent.
Absolutely. And that causes people to slow down. But what should never happen is having somebody pull in front of a car that's going too fast in an attempt to try physically slow them down themselves. That there's no logic behind that.
Another listener, Vince from Lafayette, wants to know how Uber is, in his words, skirting the issue of licensing taxis. We had a story on our air a couple months ago about how Uber's moved into a number of college communities, including this one. What do you say to Vince?
Vince, the only thing I can tell you is I have no idea. You know, we've had some folks, some students that have contacted us about Uber thinking that it's a great service, and we've asked some of the same questions. And one of our concerns is that, you know, not only is that licensing issue at stake, but we also worry about the integrity of those that might be willing to drive. So we've been kind of keeping that as a hands-off.
You and I talked a little bit on the last month's program about some of the political races that just finished. And it occurred to me one of the things we didn't talk about was the race for sheriff very much. You, of course, were in law enforcement for a long time. What is your impression of the challenges that are facing Barry Richard as he comes into being Tippecanoe County Sheriff? What are the things that are going to be foremost on his plate, do you think?
Well, it's really difficult to say. Barry has a really wide spectrum of experience. You know, he was obviously a police officer in the Lafayette Police Department. He's been involved with the Boys Club. He had some operational experience with running the DARE program. But every year, things in local government change. And because there's new people, there's changes and shifts, and there's different revenue streams and fundings that evaporate without any real fair warning. I think the biggest challenge that Barry's going to have initially is just getting his hand around the budget process. And unlike law enforcement, I mean, a police officer in Lafayette or West Lafayette basically focuses on the operational assignment of enforcing the law. The sheriff's department is completely different. You have a jail that needs to be run. And running a jail is one of the most challenging things a law enforcement professional can do because there's so many things that go on in a jail. It would be like running a hotel with a bunch of guests that don't want to be there. And I think that's going to be probably one of his biggest challenges. I mean, trying to figure out how the jail works, how to best make it, you know, continue to keep it highly functional and make sure that the inmates are safe.
Wanted to get back, actually got a tweet from our person from earlier who wanted to know about the music store. He says he was wondering if Purdue had a contract with a supplier that would disallow something like a guitar center from coming into town. So he's talking about a musical instrument store.
Okay.
So he says, is Purdue, for instance, for its bands or whatever, trying to contract out to an existing supplier, and that is keeping other people from entering the marketplace, I think is what he's getting at.
Okay, I have no idea. I've never heard anything like that before. I know that we have in the past had music stores around town, but I have no reason why. Maybe the market doesn't exist to have them survive.
If you have a question for West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis, you've got just a couple of minutes left in our program to get it in. You can call us at 496-1999. You can email those questions to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet them to @WBAA News on Twitter. I spoke a couple of months ago for a story with Caroline McKinney, who's the vice president of student government here. And one of the interesting ideas she had was she wanted to try to see if they could get a student presence on the West Lafayette City Council. And her initial idea was, can we have a non-voting member, someone who just sits in the meetings and provides input? And she told me something interesting when I sat down with her, and she said, I was really surprised how receptive the councilors were to this idea, to the point where they said, hey, look, we're doing this redistricting. Maybe we can get a campus-specific district drawn. Maybe we can, in fact, get a voting member, not necessarily, but possibly a student voting member, but someone who would live on or around the campus. Did she characterize that directly? Is there actually an appetite for such a thing?
There absolutely is. One of the concepts that we flew out after we had annexation was the fact that we need to have more representation from our student population. You know, there's 40,000 students here, and there are people who might not have the same level of interactivity with them making decisions about their future now. And we've always said, you know, I meet monthly with the Purdue graduate student president, and it's been a while, but I usually meet with the Purdue undergrad student president as well. And I've always felt that there's this big gap in understanding of what local government's role is here in West Lafayette. And when we were having the conversations about annexation, we thought it would be fantastic to have, you know, obviously a student in the role of counselor, but oftentimes that's difficult to do because of where they live and then their focus on academics. But if not, to have a non-voting member that can provide guidance for some of us when we make these decisions up at the council level. You know, Nick DeBoer, who sent in the first question, is basically representing a lot of our students, and then we've got a brand new district, and I believe it's District 3, that's going to be predominantly students as well. And our hope is between those, between Nick and between him or whomever the new counselor is going to be after annexation, we will have that presence on our council. And then it'll be important for those of us that are serving in office to make sure that we recognize their input and not just write it off as a specific single incident.
Allow me to play devil's advocate for just a second and say, I'm sure there are some people out there who would say, look, these people are only here some portion of the year. Many of them are not technically residents of even Indiana, let alone West Lafayette. Why should they have a voice in what's going on for the people who live here 12 months a year?
Well, the fact of the matter is that if you walk around campus and a lot of the students know who I am, their suggestions are awesome. They're incredible. And because there's a lot of things that we just are unaware of. You know, the permanent residents of the city of West Lafayette, when you go from neighborhood to neighborhood, have issues that are unique to that particular location. And they would very much enjoy for us to have that level of surgical government where we could find problems in that particular area and do the repair work that needed. The student population is no different. And generally speaking, the students, you know, sure, you're going to get, you know, some of the students that say, you know, quit towing cars or, you know, quit pestering us with parking tickets. But you get the others that talk just like Nick, who are talking about, we need some retail opportunities here. Why can't we get a Trader Joe's? Why can't we get an Apple store? You know, we need more bars. You know, the overcrowding problem in the bars are horrendous because we don't have any other places to go. You know, a 56-year-old mayor isn't going to find that out on his own. You know, however, a 21-year-old college student is going to be very enlightening for me to know those sort of things.
While we're on the subject broadly, how is the most current, I guess, redistricting going and trying to get those new boundary lines drawn as you go from a Class 3 to a Class 2 city?
That's solid. That's all done. We got the boundaries done. The districts have been established. That's done. The hardest thing is, and this is hard, I'm sure, for folks all across the country, is getting people to run for office. There's a great deal of interest in local politics and local government, but when it comes to trying to get folks to actually run for those offices, that they want the job, but they don't want to campaign for it. And I think that's something that's changed over the past few decades. I think there used to be a real, a bit of eagerness about running for elected office, but now it seems that people are just sort of a little put off by it.
It occurs to me also that if you were to try to have that student presence, mm-hmm. you would have to some way align what is a 4-year term with potentially with a portion of a student's career.
Sure.
So you'd almost the most efficient way to do it would be you bring them in as a freshman, mm-hmm. let them serve their 4 years in college, and then it passes on to another freshman mm-hmm. who gets to serve 4 years. Otherwise, you get partial term after partial term, and you're constantly filling vacancies, and that introduces an inefficiency into the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've actually had that problem when, the Class 3 city, the smaller West Lafayette, actually had that problem in our student district. We'd often have one student that would run until they got a job, and then, or they would be in office until they got a job, and they would leave, and they'd hand it off to the next one, and it's sort of an ongoing thing. But with the way the redistricting has been aligned, I think that we now are going to have a little bit more continuity with those two particular students.
How so? How do you get away from that inefficiency?
Because one of them, actually, the new one, Nick DeBoer, is representative of one area, and the new area is actually predominantly rental properties. And the hope is that if somebody goes to the point where they're going to stay in a particular rental property for a while, that they'll at least stay there for 2 or 3, hopefully 4 years.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but as always, I have questions left over, and we'll do it again in the new year as it happens.
Yeah.
So happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll see you again in January.
Same to you, Stan.
All right. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Tune at the same time next week for our talk with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. If in the interim you've got a question for Mayor Rozworski, or indeed for any of our mayors, you can always email those to ask@WBAA.org, or you can tweet them to @WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a nice rest of your day.